Hi there, I'm Rima, and you're listening to Chatter and Laughs. I started this podcast because I felt like everyone I know has something valuable to say, and I wanted to share that. So this is about reconnecting with friends, meeting some new ones perhaps, and sharing the insight along the way. Thank you for listening. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Chatter and Laughs. Joining me today is Detective Sergeant Sherwin Baichu from the York Regional Police. Sherwin has been serving with the York Region for over 30 years now, and he's received a number of accolades over his career, including 2 medals for exemplary service in 2012 and 2022. Needless to say, I'm honored and excited to have Sherwin on the podcast today. We've known each other for many years now. We met through my husband, Tad, who's essentially been a member of the Baichu clan since childhood, as one of Tad's friends is Sherwin's brother, Troy. Shout out to Troy Baichu. I feel like I have to do that or I'll never hear the end of it. So as I sit down to do this podcast with you, I feel very much like I'm sitting down with family. And thank you for taking the time out of your day to chat with me.
Thank you, Rima. I'm really happy to be here.
Before we get started, I wanted to highlight the sponsor for the podcast. Meraki Designs are a Canadian and South Asian-owned business that create the most beautiful resin gifts, including coasters and jewelry trays, bookmarks, keychains. This is just to name a few. I actually purchased some of their jewelry trays that were embossed with flowers for Christmas gifts last year, and they were so well received. I'll definitely share some of those pictures on my Instagram feed. And Meraki Designs have kindly offered Chatter and Laughs listeners 10% off their purchase until November 30th. You can shop their products via their Instagram at merakidesigns.shop. And now back to the podcast with Sherwin Baichu. Let's start at the beginning. Let's go back 30 years. What made you decide to become a police officer?
30 years. Rima, that is a long time ago, let me tell you.
I know.
And it wasn't really a decision that made me want to be an officer. Nothing in particular. I'll be honest. I tell people this now, all these younger people that are coming through and that want to be police officers. My decision or my choices were... I don't know. It was like a calling. I knew I wanted to. Mm-hmm. I knew I wanted to when I was a young boy at home and my mom would cut my hair. I mean, back in those days, in the 70s, mm-hmm. You didn't go to barbers. Young boys didn't go to barbers. Your mom cut your hair.
Right.
And so I remember my mom was like, how do you want me to cut your hair today? And I said, like a police officer. And she remembered that right up until later. So it's something I've always wanted to do. It was my goal in life was to become a police officer.
Okay. That's so interesting that you have that memory of your mom cutting your hair and that conversation with her. That's awesome.
Oh, yeah. And then, throughout my whole high school career, that's what I told my friends. That's what I want to do, what I want to do.
And that never changed.
No, I didn't waver once.
And it's been 30 years, over 30 years. You don't hear that a lot where someone is working in the same, you know, industry or even, you know, region for so long. I just feel like nowadays people are go, you know, 1 to 2 years and then they're moving along. But I guess that's different with police officers because there's a lot of training involved and all of that. So
Yes and no. I noticed in the last few years, I've noticed officers too are changing careers. There's more opportunity to do different things, mm-hmm. to work, whether you're going to work in municipal government, provincial government, or federal. I mean, that's a change too. So we have officers that leave York Regional Police and they'll go to the OPP or the RCMP. It's a big world and there's a lot of choices. Mm-hmm. And that's what's happening. People are having more choices now.
So your title is Detective Sergeant. What does that mean exactly? What is it that a Detective Sergeant does from day to day? I'm sure you don't issue traffic tickets anymore, or if you ever did.
I did one time, but no, not anymore.
I figured. I mean, yeah, walk us through what your days are like, because, you know, you hear Detective Sergeant and, you know, I have an image of like True Detective in my head, so I really don't know.
it's not really like that. We have a rank structure. And in the rank structure, we have our police officers, constables on the road. And within them, they have fourth class, third class, second class, first class. Then we have, when they move along to an investigative unit, they're a detective constable. Then we have sergeants, which are the supervisors on the road. And then we have detectives, which are the supervisors in an investigative unit. And then we have staff sergeants, which are the supervisors in the uniform side, and then the detective staff sergeant or detective sergeant in the criminal investigation. So that would be me.
Okay.
I manage and some really good people, but I manage four detectives and two teams of investigators.
Okay.
So essentially, in the district I work at, I manage all the criminal investigations that come through that are property crime related, stolen vehicles, theft from vehicles, drugs, street level robberies, break and enters, those sort of things. And so the investigators go out. My job is to essentially, I'm their manager.
Yeah. And what has that been like? Because I mean, prior to this, you were part of the team, I guess, in years past, and now you're a manager of the teams. So that dynamic must be interesting for you.
It is. And it is a big change, right? From doing mm-hmm. to managing, right? From doing to supervising to now managing it all.
Yeah.
The best thing is for in our profession, is that I'm not just getting promoted to manage a team that I was just working with. I have an opportunity to move along and move to another team and move to a different form of investigations and move to a different district. Mm-hmm. So the transition's difficult mentally in the sense of moving from the team player to managing the team, no different than being somebody on a team and then being the coach.
Right.
Now I'm just moving to a whole new team. So the transition isn't bad, but it's difficult because you get ants in your pants and you want to get out there.
Right. Well, especially if you've been out there for so long, right? And then all of a sudden it's like, no, someone else has to do that part of the job now.
Yeah, you know what? That is one of the things, right? Like I stick my nose into it and I start looking more and then it's like, nope, that's not my, let these guys learn, let them do their thing.
Right. And I guess that's a big part of it, right? Like any other industry is learning while doing at the same time.
100%. Making decisions, right?
Yeah. So how do you manage the bad days? I mean, I bet my bad days in marketing are not as bad as yours, perhaps, especially during those times that you were working undercover. How do you cope with the bad days?
So good days, bad days. We all have them, obviously, at work. If your bad day starts at home, like for us, and when I say us in the policing profession, it's really difficult. But my coach officer, my training officer said to me a long time ago, over 30 years ago, he says, we're not allowed to have bad days.
Mm.
We're not allowed to have bad days. We have to come to work. If your bad day started at home for whatever reason and you come to work and you're having a bad day, you're not allowed to have it. And because you got to be impartial when you go out to places and you've got to disassociate your personal life from work. And so it resonated with me and it stayed with me. And I passed that message along to all the people I work with. You're really, truly not allowed to have a bad day.
Mm-hmm.
You can have the bad day, but you've got to separate when you come to work. And managing that pressure and stuff with today's policing, we're so far advanced and we're so careful in our members and how they have their bad days and how they have bad experiences throughout our profession. We have units and we have assistants for these type of things now. We have embedded psychologists. We have embedded units where we have peer support, people mm-hmm. that are trained to go and talk to officers. So we do have coping and we do have
different mechanisms in place. Yeah. And that is different from years past, for sure. I guess, because even though the message of you can't have a bad day is there, absolutely, because you have to be able to do your job. And I think And when you look at it from a simplistic point of view, that's with everybody. I mean, when you get to work, you're supposed to decompartmentalize a bit and do your job in that sense. But
yes.
Everybody does have bad days, right? So it's great that you have those those processes in place where you can address it. It's not that you're ignoring it. It's you know, it's just that there is the time and the place for it, I guess.
Yeah, and again, things have changed from when I first started in the early 90s. Every decade, we got better.
Right? And you've been around to see it all.
I know. We're sitting here and I'm like, you're making me feel old. I'm just realizing, oh my God, I've been here a long time.
It's okay. We're all getting old, Sherman. Just embrace it.
Oh my goodness. I know. Hey,
it's experience. It's experience. Older and wiser.
Well, at the end of this, maybe I'm going to be having a bad day. I'm like, oh my goodness.
Speaking of your work undercover, which I know that you've done in the past, obviously I don't know the details. How do you manage to decompartmentalize in that aspect, essentially making yourself present, you know, in two different lives? I know that you said, you know, you can't have a bad day. That's one thing. But when you're undercover, you're two different people. So how do you manage that all while ensuring your mental health is protected? I mean, I feel like that's not easy to do. I'm sure there's training involved with that. Just curious.
Yes, there's training involved with that. And that is a great question. We have a lot of undercover officers across the province, across the country. And I did do it at a different time and day. Back then, you had your team to talk to, and they would give you the do's and don'ts from their past experience. And as you know, you've heard the hard knocks, the old way of doing business. I would go out, they would tell you, you know, this is when you would do an undercover play, or when you were working in a unit where you're constantly in plain clothes and you're going out there, they would tell you, you know, it's almost like theatrics. It's an acting job, and you go out there, you act, and then you come back. Mm-hmm. And then fortunately, I had good support for myself. I can't speak for everyone, unfortunately, because everybody has different coping skills, but I have good coping skills. I have three younger brothers. And then I have my wife and my family support and friend support. So during that time frame when it's happening, I had people that I could talk to, and it was just good. Now, again, we've gotten better. I say that all the time because it's incredible to see where I started and where we are now. Mm-hmm. And we have support mechanisms in place. We have mechanisms that you meet with a psychiatrist, psychologist, you meet with a team member, and they kind of gauge to see where you are. And there's a baseline before you start now.
Right.
And it's fantastic. It's fantastic. Yeah. So yes, there is a way to separate it, and there are checks and balances in place now. And if there is struggle, we just remove you from that situation, because right. We can still control that, right?
So. Yeah. Oh, that's good. That's interesting. I mean, I'm sure that when people decide, like when you'd always thought you wanted to be a police officer, I don't think you associated acting in that career.
No. Matter of fact, I'll be honest, in the time I've been policing, I started, and all I wanted to be was a police officer in a uniform, in that police car going to a call, or stopping somebody for speeding, or stopping an impaired driver. That's all I wanted to do when I started. And the reward and the excitement when you found out we have a drug unit, and what did they do? And then we have an intelligence bureau. What did they do? We have a tactical team, a helicopter unit, a marine unit. The choices are endless in this organization. And I've just given you some of the operational ones, and then we have administrative. Yeah. So it's pretty exciting.
Yeah. I'm sure there's been a lot of really interesting experiences and learnings over the years for you.
Yeah, I've been fortunate. I like moving around, and I like learning new things constantly. And so I've been able to experience a lot of units in my career. Mm-hmm.
So what's something about police officers that people who are listening might find surprising?
Wow.
I have some deep questions on my podcast.
Yeah. So find interesting. I could tell you that we've gone on vacation and we start talking to some other couples that we meet. And then, you know, you just kind of gauge what's happening and they ask you, what do? You say you're a police officer, or, and they look at you and they go, what? Yeah, really? And then people don't realize that we are like normal people when we're not at work.
Right.
We're very normal people. We're normal at work too. It's just, there's stigmas attached to the uniform. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, the media has a lot of stuff that's going on, different sides. And yeah, we're real people. People, they gauge everything on a television show sometimes.
Yeah.
I know it's bad to say that, but it's true.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that you say that, because as you're talking about it, I'm thinking about sports players as well, you know, like celebrities. You're watching them on TV, you know, hockey players or whatever, and you know, you don't associate them as actual people. I don't think they're idolized in a certain way where they're not necessarily a real person, right? And it must be a little bit similar with police officers, because, you know, TV shows, movies, things like that, and then you see a police officer in real life in uniform, and it takes a minute to understand that that is a person and not a character, like a celebrity in a way.
100%. So you look at, we have two sides of the coin.
Mm-hmm.
And one side, if you flip it, we can be heroes, right? And everybody's like, wow, look at this, look at these officers. And then when we do something and something bad happens, or the officers get investigated and something happens, now they're vilified. And it's like, well, you know, we're normal people and we do make mistakes.
Yeah.
And yeah.
And sometimes hockey players lose hockey games.
Yes.
And it's okay, everybody.
I know. I don't know. It's a good question about listening and what we may find what's surprising about police officers.
Mm-hmm.
It's really difficult because it's such a good question. It's like, we're normal people. So I personally, and I mean, you look at you, Rima, you know me.
Yeah.
What about me that surprises you, right?
Right. I guess when I met you, I didn't meet you as a police officer, right? So for me, you've always just been Sherwin Bechi, like, you know, friend of the family friend. It's, but I guess if it was the reverse, you know, if I had met you first as a police officer, you know, that would be different. But yeah, I guess I don't, there's nothing necessarily surprising, you know, about you.
I put on my pants one leg at a time, like everybody else.
Right. Okay. What's your number one pet peeve in this business?
Oh my goodness. My number one pet peeve, without hesitation, is when parents walk over to me when they find out I'm in plain clothes.
Right.
So when they walk over and they found out I'm a police officer, or when I was in uniform, they'd walk over with their children in hand.
Mm-hmm.
He's a police officer, and if you don't put your seatbelt on, he'll come and get you. And you're like, no, don't do that to the
children.
I'm
not the scary bad guy.
Yes. They always do it. And I know they have the best intentions of making their kids wear their seatbelt or not eat sugar after 9 o'clock.
Right.
But it's such the wrong way to do it, because they need to know that if they have a problem, they can call us.
Right.
If they're lost, they come to us.
Right.
It's a safe place to be. So yeah, it is a big pet peeve of mine. That's why I try to correct them almost immediately. Don't do that.
Right. Yeah. That's
kids will get scared. They'll be afraid of us.
Yeah. And parents do that, you know, all the time. I mean, they do that with Santa Claus. Yeah. Santa's watching right now, you know?
Right?
And but that's such a good point about the police officers. I mean, they're not there to scare the children into following the rules.
You want
to be approachable to them.
And to everybody.
Yeah.
And to everybody, right? Like, we're out there. I speak mostly for the uniform officers that are out there, the young officers. It's horrible that sometimes the kids are terrified. They see them and they cower. It's like, no, that's not what we want.
Mm-hmm. I do have to say, though, sometimes police officers can be intimidating. I don't know if it's the uniform or if you guys are trained in your acting skills or not smiling. or it's the gear. I'm not sure what it is, but sometimes I'm like, okay, you're intimidating.
This may surprise you. We're just as overwhelmed as people when we arrive sometimes to things. Sure, we're trained. Sure, we manage. Sure, we make decisions. As a police officer, I look at it as there's chaos in your life. That's why we're being called. There's mm-hmm. chaos in the situation. That's why we're being called. And the only thing that can add order to that chaos is us when we arrive. That's why we're called. Mm, okay. So sometimes, we come there with that straight face. It's because we're thinking a mile a minute. How are we resolving this?
Right. That makes sense. Okay. What are the biggest misconceptions about law enforcement?
Not all of us like donuts.
Are you sure?
Don't get me wrong, though. I do. I'm just speaking generally.
Yeah.
No.
So what is the popular baked good of choice these days?
Oh, these young, new, strong officers, the women, men and women of, they are so muscular, so strong. So I'm going to say something that's probably gluten-free or I don't know.
Yeah,
but for me, no, my body needs that.
Right.
No, my.
So not all police officers like donuts. Yeah. Okay.
No, I just teasing. Actually, the biggest misconception is you kind of hit it there when you said it earlier, how we have that stoic face and mm-hmm. we're always serious. Mm-hmm. The biggest misconception in all of that is we actually do care. When we arrive on scene, we care. We are here. We get hired to serve the community. And really, a lot of the young professionals we have now, and when I got hired, we genuinely care. We joined this profession to serve the community. We mm-hmm. joined this profession to help the weaker, help the stronger. We're compassionate. So the misconception is we don't care, or we're always like, we're impartial and we have no emotion. We do. We really, really do. And that's why we're here.
And you must. I mean, you're just people, right? So 100%. You must, right?
There are things that we see that disturb us and get us sad, gets us angry. But we have to have that face you described, right? That serious face all the time.
Right.
So that way there's no emotion coming through and we're impartial in the situation we're at. But that is the biggest misconception. Mm-hmm. We do care.
Switching gears a little bit. No, this isn't anything deep. Don't worry. So I was doing a bit of research and I came across an article that said that car thefts in York Region are up almost 50% compared to last year. I feel like that number is probably similar within the GTA, I'm guessing. Any tips for listeners on how they can work towards preventing car theft? I know that you mentioned this is an area where your team works in, so I thought perhaps you could have some insight on that.
Yes. Car thefts are up, no question about it. New cars are being stolen rapidly. It's quick. They're into your driveway, they're stealing your car, and they're gone. So some of the prevention methods, your keys, those remote starts, not the remote starts, but the push-button start cars.
Yeah.
You want to put those keys in Faraday bags, the bags that block the signal from the car to the ignition, to the keys.
Okay.
So those keys, right? It works on fancy stuff.
Yeah.
It's remote, the alarm, not the alarm, sorry, the key fob.
Yeah.
Key fob, you're in the vehicle, and then you push start. So in the house, it's still sending the signal to the car, but there's so much distance. What they do is sometimes some of these criminals, they have extenders. They'll come out there to your front door, stand there, and try to have that extend to the car. You'll see if you watch YouTube videos or anything, you'll mm-hmm. see them standing with like an antenna. And next thing you know is that car starting with a fake key fob. So if you place that in those bags that don't have the that blocks all the transmission, that'll protect that.
Okay.
Also, don't do what everybody's done in their entire lives is leave your keys at the front door hanging there. You probably want to put it further into the deeper into your home, into the kitchen area.
Okay. I have my keys at the
front. I do too.
At the front door. I have an alarm, but I do have my keys hanging at the front door.
Right.
Okay.
And it's the distance, right? And then the extended. So those are very important. And what is old is new. I would suggest like the club. Remember one of those?
Yeah,
make it difficult, because these people are stealing vehicles with very high-tech equipment. They're not walking with the low-tech equipment. So
lock
your cars. Oh my goodness, people don't lock their cars. It's incredible. Okay. Lock your cars. If you have one of the cars that are being targeted, the type of vehicles, you put the club on it. There's nothing wrong with that.
Okay. Do you feel like video cameras outside work at all? Do they help?
Yes.
They do.
Okay. I do. I believe that cameras on in your exterior of your home will capture video of the person attempting or stealing your vehicle. It'll help the police in solving the crimes, tying them to other crimes. It helps us determine trends, patterns, and it's also a deterrent, really.
Yeah.
You take a look at it, somebody sees a camera, they start thinking twice.
Right. Okay. Good to know.
I have cameras. I have cameras. Yeah,
I do too. And a dog. The dog seems to help too.
That's great.
All right. Thank you for that. If you were to look back to the deep questions, if you were to look back over your career, what are some of the moments that stand out to you? You know, many years.
Moments that stand out. I have good moments and bad moments.
Yeah.
What would you like to hear?
Let's go with the good first.
The good moments. Number one good moment. I actually met my wife on the job.
Oh, nice. That is a very good moment.
That was a good moment. That is a definite standout moment. Another standout moment in my career was getting hired. When I got hired, I was a cadet. And then I got hired as a constable. And that was one of the biggest standout moments in my life. I was so proud and I was so happy I met that goal, that lifetime goal. And then as we moved, that was my personal standout moments. And then there were standout moments of, and I know what you're waiting to hear, of the big arrest or the moment where I saved this or I did that. But unfortunately, I'm going to let you down. Those moments are part of our job. Those are our job. Those are things we do in a regular day. You know, somebody's going to drive by, somebody's going to see an accident, an officer's going to arrive on scene. And next thing you know, they're doing CPR on the poor person that's in the vehicle.
Right.
That's it. And I'm speaking, that is one of my moments where you're doing CPR and the EMS shows up and they take over the situation. Those are moments that are part of our job. So the big stand-up moments to us are the ones that impact us personally.
Yeah.
That's why I laughed. Even though I laughed, I saved my wife. But it is a big moment, right?
Yeah, no, for sure. But there must be a great feeling when you're working on something for years and years and years and you're able to, you know, have a solution to it or catch like a group of people, or there must be some feeling of accomplishment in that because you worked for so many years, right?
There's a lot of every unit I've been able to work in. There's been standout moments of arrests and there's been standout moments of success, because, and I say arrest because I've worked investigative 90% of my career. So it's not like that's what defines me, but that was mostly my career. My standout moments in those are, you know, I was in the drug squad and we worked on an investigation that took months and months, and we had the largest seizure of heroin, and I got an award and I was recognized. And my team was recognized for the award. Big standout moment, because it was the largest seizure in the GTA at that time.
Right. And then, interesting that you didn't bring that up right away.
No, because again, that's part of my job. It's what we do. And if you were to interview 10 police officers, I would guarantee you they would all start off with the highlights of the moments that were happy
personal
moments
to them. Yeah. No, that's interesting. But you do have two medals. That was one of them, I guess. I know you're surprised.
No. Those are exemplary services that is just that it's been 20 years and 30 years of policing that I've been here and that I've done what I'm supposed to be doing. I did a couple small things there, and then I was in charge of a team that we were investigating residential break-ins because we had a it was an epidemic at one point, pre-COVID. I'm sorry for the coughing there.
Oh, it's okay. You're only human. So actually, you brought up the break-ins. We talked about the preventative tips with the car theft. Do you have any preventative tips on the topic of break-ins?
Oh my
goodness. Personally, that is like a real like fear for me. A home invasion. I mean, you know, my husband is quite big, but like and tall, he might scare someone off. But no, seriously, home invasion is.
It's not a home invasion.
Okay. They're
two different crimes completely.
Okay. Yes, you're right. Not a home invasion, but I am afraid of home invasions. And so, yeah, let's go back to break-ins.
So the break-in-enters.
Break-in-enters.
These people, these cowardly people, I call them, are breaking into your home while you're not home.
Okay.
Rummaging through your house, taking what they want, which I'll get into in 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And then they leave. Usually the same way they came in because it's already open.
Yeah.
There's different types of entries, and that's what we'll cover now. So the front door, there's groups that come in and they kick in the front door. The front door isn't sturdy and secure enough. So I would suggest on that point, your lock, the deadbolt, and if you use a manufacturer stop, it's smaller screws. You want to take deeper screws, and you want to make it difficult for them to get in, including deadbolts into the ground or into the ceiling, but make it difficult for them to get into because they're looking for the easiest target and the easiest point of entry.
Right.
Then you have your, or you can go to any of those stores, hardware stores.
Yep.
And purchase. They have stuff that wedges the door handle to the floor and you can use that as well.
Okay.
The back door is another point of entry where they go through the patio door.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have, and I tell everybody, like, you got to secure your back patio door. People don't think, they don't even lock it.
I know a lot of people who don't lock their front door, which
has
never been the case with me because, I mean, I just haven't.
Yeah.
But I know a lot of people who do leave their front doors unlocked. And I think a lot of them feel like some of them live in small towns or whatever, but I don't know.
I agree with you. And then we have second story entries, which where they bring their own ladders or they use the ladders at the house. 90% of the time they'll try to use their own the ladders on the side of your house. Like if you think of people's homes and you walk in the backyard, they'll have a ladder that's not secured to anything and it's just sitting on the side of the house. They'll use that ladder to go into a second story window because predominantly your second story window
is not right.
So lock your house when you're leaving, lock your windows when you're leaving. That is the number one thing I say. Second thing is if you're going on vacation, have somebody pick up your newspapers and your mail. Okay. Have somebody put out a blue bin in your property if you're gone for the week. If it's wintertime, have somebody shovel your driveway. Get to know your neighbors.
Yeah.
That is a big thing I noticed was when we would canvass after an entry occurred, looking for video from all the houses or see if there's any witnesses. The neighbors would be like, oh, I didn't even know they were gone, or I don't know who they are. I've never even spoken to them. And you're like, oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
So I always tell people your best security is your neighbors.
Right.
Meet your neighbors. The second thing on the security with that is, I am, oh, my goodness, I'm being too humid here now.
Okay.
It is honestly, don't tell anybody you're going. Don't post it on social media.
Yeah, don't announce it.
Look on social media and people are like, oh, I'm going to Aruba for 5 weeks, and you're like, oh my goodness.
Right.
The house is empty.
Right.
You know what I mean?
That's a good point.
A lot of this stuff is just common sense stuff, but we don't see it because we don't believe it's gonna happen to us.
Right. Yeah,
so,
and it's a good point to make. I mean, we're so used to automatically posting on social media about everything that we're not even thinking about the fact that, you know, you don't necessarily want people to know you're going away or that you're at the airport right now, right?
Right.
So,
you know, oh my goodness, yeah, totally. And then, so I know I'm going to circle back to the entry so everybody's aware. When they get into your house, it's not like they're going through your kitchen and stuff. They're going up to where you keep your electronics, your rings, your jewelry, and your cash, which is usually a bedroom.
Yeah.
They ransack those bedrooms as fast as they can. These are not your old time thieves that were stealing radios and televisions. These are sophisticated, organized groups that are just quickly coming in, stealing all the stuff that they can get high value for really quickly, and that can be filled and carried in a bag.
Right.
And they're gone. And they're gone like lightning. Yeah. So I suggest that if you do have valuables that you leave in your house on a regular basis, lock it up. Lock in the safe. Buy a safe. Put one in the basement. Dude, just think that this is valuable and I couldn't lose this. So then why are you leaving it out in the open?
Right.
What, that lock, you have a cheap lock protecting your house. Why don't you go out and buy a better one?
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. What's it worth to you?
Mm-hmm. So true. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Are you listening, Dad?
I would just put him by the front door.
Yeah, I know. Him and Raven, our dog.
Yes.
All right. Where was I? That was good tips. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So you've served for over 30 years now. I know we keep bringing up the number. I should stop bringing it up. But I mean, what's the word I'm looking for? It's great. It's amazing. It's, something to be proud of for sure. Is there something you can share with the listeners today that gives us hope for humanity? I mean, I feel like after being a police officer and in that industry for so long, maybe you're a little jaded, but perhaps, okay, good. Yeah. Leave us with a little bit of hope with after everything that you've seen over the years.
The most important thing is, with your question about humanity, mm-hmm. It's there. There's so much humanity out there. It's a beautiful place. I know this sounds corny, but we're out there. And yes, there is the exception. That's why we get called to that exception. We're dealing with 10% of the public 90% of the time. But that other 90% of the public, they're beautiful people. Yeah. And even the ones that call us, people do care about people and people still look after people. That's why you'll see on the news or you watch in social media, people are offering tips and this is how you fix that. This is don't do that. General public, people are taping in their in-car videos, offering support to the police for investigations to help somebody else. It's not so much they're helping us,
They're
helping the other person.
Yeah.
So yes, believe in it. Believe in your neighbor, believe in the humanity. It's there.
Yeah. It's there. There is goodness out there.
There is so much goodness out there.
People are not always out just for themselves.
No. No, they're not.
That's good. Okay. It's good to hear that from a detective sergeant. You know what I mean? Because I like to think, that people are good. You know, you like to believe that. But with everything that you hear and things that happen, sometimes you feel like, man, like, everybody just cares about themselves all the time, right? But it's nice to hear that from you because, you've been in different scenarios where there's been a lot of struggle and perhaps you would have had a different outlook, but you don't. So that's good.
Yeah.
I'm just rambling there, but.
No, you're not. No. As long as you say hi to somebody sometimes, that's just all it takes.
Mm-hmm.
Hello. Hold the door open, something small.
Yeah. And it's so funny when you were talking about how a lot of people don't even know their neighbors anymore.
No.
I feel like that is a big thing that has changed over the years as well, right? Back in the day, you used to know your neighbors. You grew up with your neighbors, right? You knew everything about them. They were like an extension of your family in some way. But nowadays, you could go 20 years and not even know the person across the street from you. And I feel like there's something wrong there with us. Like, I feel like, is it that we're so busy that we just don't have the time or don't want to even take a moment to put in that effort or say hello? Or I'm not sure what it is, but I definitely feel that. I definitely feel like when I was a kid, I knew all the neighbors on our street. My parents knew all the neighbors, but that's not necessarily the case anymore. And I'm not sure what that is, but we need to change that.
Yes, it doesn't, you know what? Instead of trying to figure out why this is happening and why people aren't talking to their neighbors, be the difference. Go over and just, when you see them out there shoveling their driveway or cutting their lawn, say hi.
Yeah. Literally just a simple, it's a simple hello.
Simple hello. That's all it takes sometimes.
Yeah.
I say hello to all my neighbors. I chat a lot. So I'll go and I'll talk to my neighbors. I have an older neighbor next to me. I cut his lawn.
Yeah.
I make my son shovel his driveway in the wintertime.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing wrong with saying hi to the neighbors.
Yeah. Well, they also know you're a police officer. No, so they're probably, oh, they don't. Okay. I was going to say, all of them. They're some definitely do. Not going to respond to you.
A couple do, and some don't. A
couple don't. Yeah. No, but it's true. I mean, I like the idea that we're wrapping up the podcast on this note, because I just feel like there is something about, just like if you smile at someone, they're going to smile back at you, right? Yes,
100%.
And we just don't do that anymore. And I think that if you were to start to give off some of that energy, then you're going to get that back. And if you're away, you know, those neighbors are going to want to take care of your house, are going to want to make sure that everything is secure, are going to want to watch your kids when they're playing outside, and you know, and we've lost that a little bit, but it's such a simple thing to be able to get it back.
100%. If I give any advice on it, don't wait for anything to happen. You make it happen. Just do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And everything you do, just do it.
Yeah.
Because there's always that voice, hey, when you're looking at them going, I don't really want to go say hi to them. I got to get going, blah, blah.
Right.
Push that voice down and just go, hey, how are you doing today? And just keep going.
Yeah.
Just keep going. That's all it takes.
I love it. Okay. Well, thank you very much for joining me today. And I think like you've given us so much insight and tips, and I have to go and now lock up all my things.
No,
I'm just kidding. But no, thank you. Honestly, it's always so interesting for me because I interview so many different people from different areas. And I've always known everyone I know has something valuable to say. And this interview is no exception. So thank you. All right.
Have a great day.
Say hi to your neighbors. And that's a wrap for today. Thank you all for listening. Just a reminder to please subscribe to Chatter and Laughs wherever you listen to your podcast, as it is a big help for me. If you enjoyed this episode, please let me know. You can leave a review or reach out to me directly. I always love sharing the feedback with my guests. And for those of you who might be interested in supporting or sponsoring an episode, I want to hear from you as well. That way I can give you a big shout out on the podcast. You can find me on Instagram at Chatter and Laughs and through email at Rima@chatterandlaughs.ca. Bye for now.